My name is Gil Feliciano, producer of SitRep NYC. In June of 2019, DVS partnered with Sage Vets and the Generations Project for a live storytelling event featuring personal stories from LGBT veterans representing different service eras, including World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War. Today, you're going to hear those stories. This is Edward Field, World War II veteran.
I was a navigator in the 8th Air Force, stationed in England during World War II, and flew bombing missions over Germany. And how I became a flyer, it was on the rebound from a love affair I had with a master sergeant in my barracks. I enlisted in the Air Force because I didn't want to be drafted as a foot soldier. So I went through basic training, and they sent me to a clerk typist school in Colorado, after which I was assigned to the headquarters in Tinker Field outside Oklahoma City. And I was living in the barracks. And at the end of the barracks were the rooms for the non-commissioned officers. And I did spot Master Sergeant Glenn Cowden. But I didn't know him. That was something beyond me. We used to go into Oklahoma City on the weekends and were driven in trucks with canvas covered, I guess they were troop carriers, something like that. They drove us in, and you had to catch the last one back about 11 o'clock. So, of course, we all stayed away as long as we could, drinking 3.2 beer, because Oklahoma was a dry state. And I, with everybody else, I raced back to the trucks to get back to the base on time. And we piled into the backs of the trucks and just piled in. And it was dark, there were no lights. And I found myself sitting on the lap of Master Sergeant Glenn Cowden. And amazingly, we were snuggling and sort of smooching in the darkness. Of course, all the men were all piled up around us, so nobody paid any attention. And it kind of cemented it began a love affair. And the next time we went to Oklahoma City, we rented a room in a hotel, and that was our honeymoon. The odd thing about it was the amazing thing was that he moved me into his room, and I was only a corporal and not entitled to be in one of the big shots' rooms. And right openly, and I don't understand how it really wasn't noticed. The Army was very strict about you couldn't be caught doing it. You got court-martialed if you got caught. And there we were having an affair openly in the barracks in his room. He used to invite all his, I used to go working in the headquarters as a clerk every day, and he went he was in the Justice Department. I don't know what it was called, but he memorized all of the Army regulations and went around the country with colonels, big shots. He used to have bull sessions in his room with all of the sergeants used to come in, and they used to tie trout flies. He was a Southern boy who liked trout fishing. And he also used to joust with his buddies in some southern, it was a southern practice of word play. You used to say, you're so low you could crawl under the belly of a flea. And then the other guy would have to outdo him. It was sort of thing that they did. And but one day in the bull session, I don't know why, I didn't even think why, I can imagine now why, but he twisted my arm in front of everybody. He grabbed me and twisted my arm behind my back, painfully. And it was a terrible shock. I had grown up, my parents were immigrant Jews from Eastern Europe, and we lived in a WASP town that hated us, despised us. And every day, going to and from school, I used to be beaten up by the boys who were all bigger than me. I was a little thing. And they used to also twist my arm behind my back. So when Master Sergeant Glenn Cowden did it to me, it was I realized it ended between us instantly. I felt nothing more for that, for him. But I didn't know how to get away. I was living in his room. I couldn't move back into the barracks because I couldn't explain it to anybody. But that day in my office at my desk, I got a leaflet that said, aviation cadets wanted. Because so many planes had been shot down over Europe, they were short of aviation personnel. And I wasn't eligible to be a cadet before because I didn't have a college degree. Suddenly I was eligible. They had dropped the qualification. And I went through aviation, I got away and went through aviation cadets. It's how I got away from Master Sergeant Glenn Cowden and became a navigator because I was good at math. They made me a navigator. And I was shipped overseas and flew 27 missions with my bomb group and saw all kinds of gay activity that I didn't know anything about before. One of the key experiences in discovering the gay world. I had plenty of sex when I was a kid because all you had to do was hitchhike and a man would stop and pick you up and you had sex in the car. So I was really quite experienced about sex, but I didn't know that there was a gay world. And so I had lots of experiences in the army of discovering what the gay world was about. And in the big illumination happened when I went into a restaurant in Marseille, and it was full of men who all turned their heads when I came into the room in my officer's uniform and my silver wings. And I knew at that moment there was a gay world.
George Stewart, Korean War veteran.
I went into service in 1950 after graduating from high school. When we got to basic training, I went to a leadership school and I had to learn to be my platoon sergeant. And you may not know this, but my platoon sergeant was really a drag queen. And I was surprised. I mean, I didn't know they had him in the service. He would come at us and say, okay, girls, make mother look good this morning. And we had better make mother look good. You didn't want to make mom mad, you know. And I got to be a court reporter. They sent me to school to be a court reporter. My job was to take the boards and the court marshals But these boards were 3566 for homosexuals who got caught in the act of things. Because by that time, they were just, you know. And you should hear some of the stories that those guys told as to how they became gay. One guy told how his father was upset with him because he liked to stay in the kitchen with his mom. Well, so what's wrong with that? You know, he was learning to cook. Maybe he liked to cook. But he brought his co-workers, and they were all working on buildings, constructions, right? And he said, "You want to be a woman, huh?" And he let his co-workers have sex with his son to teach him what women have to go through. That was just one of the boards that I took. So you take enough of those. I started saying, what in the hell is going on here? How could her father do that? But to make a long story short, I learned a lot about being gay because I was in the closet and didn't know I was in the closet. I just didn't know what was going on. I'm learning. So I went in the service. That's the first time I've had sex. I used to go to the house of prostitution. And so they taught me about sex. But before that, I had one little incident in Germany when it was so cold, we had to share our sleeping bags with each other. And this little boy said to me, can I get funky with you? I said, what do you mean by that? Well, he showed me what he meant, and I liked it. We became good buddies. We became the best of friends. So that was my experience, my first experience with a homosexual act. It wasn't until I left the service and came to New York that I didn't know that I had homosexual tendencies. I really didn't. Because I couldn't come out the closet. That closet was locked. But when I started meeting people and talk about how they hated gays, even when you go to church, the gays going to hell, I didn't believe that. One time I started having gay experiences. I went to a party one time that night, to a gay party. One of my choir members at church wanted me to go with him. I never saw so many gay men in my life. I mean, they were good looking gay men. So I met them, and then they started telling me about this organization called SAGE. That's how I got to get to SAGE. So I went to SAGE as a volunteer. SAGE had a thing with AARP where you could get a stipend and do what you had to do. And they're going to pull me off the stage. That's why I should have kept to my notes. But just let me tell you one thing. If it wasn't for SAGE, I would not be as happy as I am now living in New York. I would still have been trying to be in that closet. But meeting the friendship and things of SAGE, and they gave me opportunities that I never thought I would have before. This was one of them.
John Emmett Connors, Vietnam veteran.
Okay, so it was 1968. A lot was going on. In the month of June, 700 men died in Vietnam. 40,000 were being called up. It was the anti-war movement. It was the civil rights movement. It was the sexual revolution. I was looking for a way out, like a lot of people. I had no interest in this war whatsoever. I wanted to move to New York and be an artist. I actually made it down. I'm from Troy, New York, a number of generations from Troy, New York. I actually made it down here for a couple of months and actually landed a job and before that dreaded letter came from the civil service, from the selective service. And I went up and, of course, passed my physical. And there were a few different ways you could get out of it. You know, this wasn't World War II. We weren't attacked. You know, there was a lot, but there was a strong feelings of in my generation, there were strong feelings against the war. It was illegal and it was immoral. And I'm thinking, how am I going to get out of it? Now, of course, I had never had a gay experience yet. I'd had heterosexual experiences, but never a gay experience sexually. And I wasn't sure I could honestly check that box. And I wasn't sure I would check that box because who are they to say I'm not good enough? You know, so my ego wasn't going to let me check that box anyway. So, and of course, believe it or not, there were some doctors that would either write you a note saying that you were crazy or that you had bone spurs. And that's a real thing. There was a bone spur doctor. So I decided as much as I was against this war, I'm a working class guy, and my sister's husband was in Vietnam, and she was having their first child. We were very close. I had seven brothers and sisters, but I was particularly close to this one sister. We're only a year and a half apart. I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't say I'm not going to go, you know. But I didn't want to kill anybody, so I did go in as I enlisted in the Navy as a hospital corpsman, and not knowing that they could transfer me into the Marine Corps, which is eventually what happened. So by the time I was in and gone through my various trainings, you know, boot camp, hospital corps school, short field medical service school with the Marine Corps, and then back to the hospital that I would really be doing my main training at, I was stationed in New York City in the summer of 1969. I arrived in my tight white sailor suit, and it really wasn't so bad. I was 20 years old. So it was in the sexual revolution was in the air, you know, and even though the there was a great divide in for the people in the hospital, you know, we lived in the hospital. It was on base, St. Albans Naval Hospital. It's now a veterans hospital. And we would work 12 days. We would go every 12 days. We were allowed off the base, you know, to we work 12-hour shifts. The hospital was filled to capacity with the wounded. So there was a great divide between that, and it was the summer of Woodstock, you know. So we didn't have a lot of, we were very isolated from the rest of society. And I felt very isolated until I discovered Christopher Street. So it really was the gay world that sort of was my lifeline into some kind of sanity and stuff. And oddly enough, when I found Christopher Street and I discovered, yes, I really am gay, and I walked into one of the first bars and I saw it all across the bar were corpsmen from the base. And I go, okay, this is really something. So it was a busy time. A lot of them were just back from Vietnam, and some of them were having orders to go to Vietnam. So then finally my number came up and to be attached to the Marine Corps. For those of you who don't know, they actually take the Navy uniform away and give you a Marine Corps uniform, and you're assigned to a Marine Corps thing, and you're in Marine Corps barracks and the whole thing. So I got attached to the Marine Corps Air Squadron, and I went down there, and that was a whole different thing. That wasn't Christopher Street. You know, that was a whole different thing. And then eventually, so then I discovered how, you know, you really had to hide being gay, whereas in the hospital duty, it was, you know, we were careful enough. But, I didn't have any big moral issues about being gay, and my family really didn't care. You know, they had enough children. I already had 17 nieces and nephews, you know. It was no, my parents weren't religious or strict or anything like that. So I didn't have that level of problems that some people had with being gay. It was an easy coming out for me. And so I survived all that. So I never got sent to Vietnam anyway. Instead, I got attached to a helicopter squadron and spent a year on an aircraft carrier as part of the flight crew doing air vac medic. So that year I spent mostly in the Mediterranean ports. And then I got to know sort of the international gay. And that was, I discovered not a big difference really. And I discovered, you know, with this isn't just, you know, American culture. This isn't just the way it is in progressive cities and stuff. There's gay everywhere, you know, and there's within the gay world, there's all these different versions and all these different ways. We're all very complicated people, and we have so many different ways we can live our lives. So it was at the end of the 4 years, you know, I got out. I really was a different person, and the world was different. And that was 4 years. The world changed a lot. And, you know, sort of I always use the analogy. I was hoping the whole time, because I wanted to be an artist. And when I had come down to New York before getting my draft letter, I had already started at the Art Students League. I was already on my way to being an artist. And that all got interrupted. So the minute I got out, I went right back to find my tribe. And I've been able to live my life as an artist, you know, and do it. So the military wasn't a bad experience for me. I saw homophobia. I saw the disasters of war. But it was, you know, I grew a lot and I learned a lot from it, too. So and like I said, I saw the world and I saw what it was like to be gay all over this world. So in recent years, I've gotten very involved with SAGE and very involved with the veterans community. I teach some art at the Veterans Hospital, and it's I'm wrapping it up now. I'm in my 70s. Maybe I got 20 years left. So I'll hopefully. Maybe 25 if I make it to your age. So it's, you know, that's my story. So thank you.
That's it for Sit Rep NYC. Thanks for listening.